get a basic framework for this issue. So as we started to say yesterday, so we know that the Gemara tells us that there is some kind of a rov here, that rov mitzuyin etzel shchita or mumchin, that it's fair to assume that when somebody's going to be involved with shchita, he must know what he's doing, or he likely knows what he's doing. And that is in the category of some kind of a rov, as we saw, we don't know exactly what kind. And that gives us some kind of flexibility in our halachic stance. We also don't know what kind. So we saw that there were different views in the Rishonim as to what we can do with this rov. That according to a number of the Rishonim, the Rush quotes this view, and others, it means that we can let the shechita progress l'chachila with somebody who is unidentified as a mumcha, because we'll be able to check him afterwards. And it was legitimate to proceed because the rov is that he is a knowledgeable shochet, and we should do it with the intention of checking afterwards. If it turns out that we can't check afterwards, that he's not around to ask, so then it's still going to be acceptable because of this rov. So there you see that it's not a all-out embracing of the rov. It's that it's enough to let us work with l'chachila planning to check, and it's enough to let us get by if we don't check, because if we don't have any further access to information, if the guy's not around to ask, so then we at least have this rov to rely on. Other Rishonim saw it kind of coming from the other direction, that Rashi seems to sound like, and the Torah quotes this as the view of the Bala Iter, that we don't have to check afterwards because we have this rov, but l'chachila we should only give to somebody who's an expert. So again, the rov is kind of a after-the-fact kind of scenario, but it's not something that is fully without any other need for any clarification, because it's essentially a tool where we don't have other ways to be sure. And then there is the third view, which the Torah also quotes, as it also seems to be the view of the Ra'ah, the Berak HaBayis. You guys got a chance to see the Berak HaBayis today? You guys basically got through the list today, more or less?
Yeah, cool.
So if you got to see that, yeah, it's a L'chachila on both ends, that this is kind of a across-the-board rov. And it's a rov that is effective for all purposes, so we can give them l'chachila, and we don't have to check afterwards. So that was the view that we indicated yesterday is probably a little surprising, because the concept of relying on a rov is one which we proudly claim is sourced in our first parak of Chulin, we'll get to later. But it's presumably not perfect. It may be better or maybe worse depending on what it's compared to, and there will be different kinds of rov that we'll see. But rov is not absolute knowledge. So, okay, it's not a perfect world. We don't always have access to absolute knowledge, so we need a system to function. But if we could get absolute knowledge, why shouldn't we check? So why would we not want to be mevarer when it's possible for us to be mevarer? And like we discussed, anticipating the future sugya, you know, some of these devices are what you would call a birur, or our best effort to try to ascertain what we think the truth is. Some of them would be called a hanhaga, meaning that we're not even necessarily assuming it's the truth, but it's a legitimate path under the circumstances. So some are more absolute than others, but still, if you could be mevar, if you could find out the answer, why don't we find out the answer? Right?
Just to add to that, I mean, we had like a large discussion of who can and cannot do shechita. It seems like we put a lot of emphasis on here, and the rov kind of seems like, well, most likely it'll be fine.
Well, that's an interesting point. The question is, what exactly is this rov accomplishing for us? Because some of the issues of who was disqualified from shechita had to do with other kinds of considerations. Right? The consideration of whether a bar zvicha, whether there were no b'davar zara, or the like. Here, we're wondering, just assuming that it wasn't a person who has that kind of a disqualification. But what about, do they know what they're talking about? Because if you don't know the halachas, so it's clearly easy to mess up. And it's clearly possible, we haven't even gotten into the psul yishchita, that's one of the things we're going to have ahead of us. But if you don't know the basic psul yishchita, so then the chances that you're going to make a mistake are pretty decent. So just to zero in on that, how much do we have to worry about that? So here we'll say, okay, that if the person is shechting in the first place, presumably is a mumcha. Now, among this machlokish rishonim, if you saw the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah with the same sif and simon as he had for last week, but it's different words we're focusing on now in simon aleph, sif aleph, where the Ramah and the Shulchan Aruch landed on different sides of the not absolutely lechachila equation. And that the Shulchan Aruch says that they could shecht without being clarified, but you have to clarify afterwards. And the Ramah says that yesh omrim, that we don't give l'chachila under these circumstances. So both the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, they're taking the two different sides of the assumption that it's not perfect. And on one end or the other, there's something to worry about. Okay, so far so good?
Not l'chachila under these circumstances.
It means that l'chachila, if you're able to check, so you should check. And you shouldn't give to somebody who you don't know is qualified. But if l'maisa, the shechita has already happened, and you don't know what his knowledge level is, you can assume that he was a mumcha. But l'chachila, you should only give to a known mumcha. So those positions are easier to understand than this third view that seems to be totally okay with it. Why shouldn't we say that essentially, if we could figure out more, you should figure it out. Now, if you saw the Badak HaBayis, the Ra'ah asked the question in a more technical way. He adds another dimension. That why don't we say, like you find in the context of other discussions of Rov, and what we'll get into, that smoch miyuta l'chazaka, that this rove is working against something. Right? What's it working against? It's working against the chazaka. Why? Because the animal, last we heard, was not shechted. We know that at some point in history, this animal was definitely not yet shechted. So the shechita is going to take it from a status of Eivor Min HaChai to a status of kosher. So the chazaka is that it's not yet that. And again, this is some of the very labedic stuff that's awaiting us to talk about chazakas and presumptions and past status and the like. A lot of fun stuff coming up. But at the moment, so we have a chazaka on the other end. Right? We have this animal, last we heard, was not shechted. Now we have an unclear situation. So we have the chazaka that it was Eino Zavuach, and we have a rove in the other direction. But why don't we strengthen the chazaka with a miyut? What does that mean? So just to clarify, so some explain, this is why we say in monetary matters we don't follow a rove. And those who were here last year might recall we talked about that in the context of Bava Kamma. That because a rove is not absolute, there is a minority. So there is some significance to that. You know, if a rove was 100%, so then you could say, all right, there's no chance of there being anything else. So if you have two people arguing over a monetary matter, and one guy has a 100% rove, so then he's basically saying it's impossible for it to be anything else.
Well, that's not a rove anymore.
It's an absoluteness.
Yeah.
Right. That point is going to come up in a minute. But because a rove is not that, like you're saying, a rove means it's a majority, but there's some percentage of possibility the other way. So there's some degree of credibility that it could be something else. Let's say you have a 75% rove, so that there's a 25% chance that it's something else. That's meaningful. So you have the chazaka, which puts the presumption on the idea that it wasn't shechted yet, And you do have some degree of credibility to the mere possibility. So why don't we combine those two and say that we should assume that this was not validly shechted? Now you saw this in the Bedek HaBayis? So essentially, he takes the position that we have to say that there isn't even a miyut here. And then the Rashba ends up asking on him, well, then why do we say rov? We should say kol. You think the Gemara is understating it? That's unusual. You say that, well, it's always the case. And what would that even mean? So in order to consider this question, we have to go back to what I left you with yesterday. What do we mean by a rov here? We said yesterday there are at least two other kinds of rov, and is it possible that there's a third kind also that might be relevant here? And that was considered by the Beis HaLevi. So like we said yesterday, we'll have three grids today. The grid Soloveitchik the first, the Beis HaLevi, the grid Soloveitchik the second, the Rav, and the grid Bleich, Yibad Al-Chaim, who will mention his position on this also. So we have a triple grid discussion. So the Rav Soloveitchik in his shiurim refers to this Beis HaLevi also. The Beis HaLevi, I think I mentioned yesterday, is pretty extensive because he has 8 straight tshuvas about this topic, about the whole concept of Rov Mitzinius or Shkutin and related things. The first 8 Simon in Chelik Beis, the Beis HaLevi. So you have a lot of time over Yanta if you want to read all of his. Beis HaLevi had a different style in general of presentation, certainly than his great-grandson did. But if you want to read the tshuvas, a lot to say. So there he considers the possibility that maybe it's a third kind of Rov. So let's first talk about all the possibilities. So what are the first two kinds of Rov? So let's assume that we have a ruba d'issa kaman, which for our purposes we'll define as a statistical rove, that we have a general sense of what the numbers are, and 8 out of 10 do this, so you're allowed to rely on that. A ruba d'lessa kaman we'll define for now as similar to a chazaka, and essentially it's a default presumption. Some people do such and such.
Isn't that not based off a statistical?
Because not that we're just looking at people like, for example, if you want to talk about ethnic populations or religious populations, right? So then you could have a row if you say in this country 85% are Christian and 10% are Jewish and 5% are Muslim. So there's nothing that's dictating that. It just happens to be that's what's going on in that place. But a chazaka, ruba d'lessa kaman, would be more like, people don't lie about things that will eventually be uncovered. So it's not, we don't have no idea how many people do this, but it's a default that that's how we can expect people to act. So if we don't have any other indications, we'll assume that's true. Now, it's possible that somebody will defy this, right? So it doesn't necessarily represent actually 100% of the population. It just represents most of the population. And not because it happens to be that there's more of this type than the other type in this area, but because that's the default position, so it's fair to work on that. We'll call that a ruba d'lessa kaman. So is rov mitzuyu neitzel shchita mumchenheim, is it either one of those? Could be, right? It could be that maybe it means that just most of the people who are going to shecht, you can tell, they're people who know what they're doing. How many people have ever tried to shecht an animal without having a clue? One possibility. Or we could phrase it more as a ruba d'lessa kaman and say that it just makes sense that if a person is going to shecht, and if he just wants to kill an animal and doesn't care about shechita, then there's easier ways to do it. If he's going to the trouble of shechting, and he knows, presumably, that if he messes up, he's going to waste the animal. So it makes sense that a person who's going to shecht is probably only going to take on this responsibility if he knows what he's doing. So that would be more formulated as a ruba d'lessa kaman.
Okay, what'd you say?
It could be. Very often you'll have more than one factor working together, and it's entirely possible. But Beis Halevi suggests that maybe this is a third model, that maybe this is based on the Chezkas Kashrus that a person has. That everybody starts off with the assumption of acting properly. And it's interesting, in the footnotes in the Shiurim of Rav Soloveitchik, they point to this in the Panini Harav, in Rav Schechter's, one of his Svarim where he talks about Rav Soloveitchik's Torah. He has a short paragraph there where he raises a similar investigation in the name of the Rav in terms of what does the Cheskas Kashrus mean in general, the assumption that we normally take that every Jew is doing things properly until proven otherwise. So what's that based on? Is that a Rav? And is that maybe going to depend then on where you are and when you are? Or is it something different? Is it basically that just until we know that there's anything improper about how a person acts, so then we can assume that everything is fine?
Is that different than Eid Echanaman
Visser? So it's actually related to why, it's part of, maybe we have to figure out why Eid Echanaman Visser is true. And so it could be, it could affect the understanding of Eda Echa Neman Bisurin. So is Eda Echa Neman Bisurin because it's a principle of Neamonis, or because some people start with the Cheskas Kashrus and therefore it connects to that. So it's part of the background of Eda Echa Neman Bisurin. I forgot what page this is in the Pnei Haram. It's Reish Chof Gimel. But I think it's referred to in the footnotes in the Shiur Hegret. So you can take a look if you want to look it up. But here also you could say that perhaps we're not talking about any kind of statistical rove or even a default human nature thing, but that those who are involved in Shechita, they start off with the Cheskas Kashrus. So part of the Cheskas Kashrus is, and the Cheskas Kashrus normally doesn't presume lumdus or education. It presumes that you're doing the right thing and not the wrong thing. So usually you don't say, well, this guy is a Cheskas Kashrus, he probably knows Shas, or he probably knows Hilchos Shabbos. I say Cheskas Kashrus means that he behaves properly. But here, because they're intertwined, because people understand that there is a expertise required for Shechita, and to attempt Shechita without having a sense of that is going to put the situation at risk of one problem or another. So part of the Cheskas Kashrus, not that the Cheskas Kashrus that they know Shechita, Cheskas Kashrus is that they're not going to get involved in Shechita unless they know Shechita. So once they get involved in shechting an animal, they probably know Shechita. So it wants to suggest that if that's how we understand it, so then maybe that's why we won't say Smoch Miyuta L'Chazaka. We're not going to say, let's take this minority position and factor that in also, because essentially it's irrelevant. The premise that we can view everyone as starting off kosher doesn't matter how many people there are out there who don't behave that way or who might defy the default position. It's not relevant right now. We're allowed to look at any individual and say that essentially there is a 100% acceptability to this guy until we know differently. Make sense?
It's just focusing on that one person.
Right, that when you're looking at one case, whoever, even this mystery guy who shechted it, even though we don't know anything about him, but we have the Cheskas Kashrus to say he starts off kosher. He's kosher until proven otherwise. And since he's kosher until proven otherwise, so it doesn't matter what anyone else is doing. Or the existence of a number of people out there who may defy that expectation. So he uses that to explain the Beis Halevi. Beis Halevi uses that to explain the Bedek HaBayis and the Mishmeres HaBayis. This question about why is it Rove instead of Kol. So he says to answer that question, essentially we're coming from a Rove type of premise, but if bottom line means that there isn't a Miut to worry about. So with that, you can consider other questions. You know, what if you were to have a scenario where there is a majority of people going around shechting who don't necessarily know what they're doing? You know, does it matter if you're in a particular area where some of the facts might be different? Is it dependent on a certain possibility of being educated? So some of the Svarim talk about, let's say you have somebody who's not able to talk and not able to hear. Does that matter? And just to connect this back in to the previous sugya, so the question of nashim shechting, so let's revisit that question for a second. So when it comes to women shechting, so we said there were two issues to consider, despite the fact that pretty much all of the Rishonim and the Shulchan Aruch except that a woman is, at least theoretically, kosher to shecht. So that was taken as pretty much across the board consensus. And there were two positions in the way to consider. One was the view of the Eldar Hadani, the Hilchos Eretz Yisrael, that Nashim shouldn't shecht, and that view was not accepted by the Rishonim, and there were various objections brought to it. And then there was the view that the Ramah reflects, and the Sefer Agur, the Beis Yosef quotes, that says that the minig has been that women shouldn't shecht. And that's how we leave it. So, do those two relate to each other? We said presumably not. Right? That the minig is based on something else. And we discussed what the minig might be based on. Rabbi Bleich suggests in his Sefer, and I'm remembering that when I took my Bechina for the Kol Aliyim, did I mention this the other day? That I went to my Bechina for the Kol Aliyim, Rabbi Bleich was one of those who gives the Bechina, so he asked me about this Tosfos, remember, about this Tosfos on Daf Beis, about why should women not shecht according to that opinion. And I think I told him some of the things that we mentioned, but I also told him the Tshuvas Chaim Britzon that I mentioned to you yesterday, you could look at it if you want, so full Polish approach. So we discussed this at the time. So now I see in his Sefer Ibn Asivas HaHalacha in Chelek Dalet, so he has an essay here about Rov Mitzvah Yonetzel Shechita. And basically wants to suggest that this question as to what is the issue or how do you understand what this Rov means, so it's one thing to view it like the Beis Halevi said in the Berak HaBayis that maybe it comes from the Chezkas Kashrus. Because he thinks the Ramah is essentially saying differently. Because the language of the Ramah is, he says, Shekvar Nogu Shol Lishchot, that the Minig is not, and he ends, Zuchena Minig She'ein Nashim Shochtos. So what's he referring back to there? So he suggests that the Ramah is understanding that maybe, according to him, this is a statistical rov. Rov Mitzuyah Neitzel Shechita is a statistical rov. So part of the calculation is we have to figure out who shechts and what this says about them. But if we've taken on a practice that women don't shecht, so then you can't apply to them anymore the idea of being a part of this rov, because practically speaking, they don't do it. So since the minhag has been that women don't shecht, so now we can't let them shecht either, because we don't have this principle of rov mitzuyah. Now you have to figure out practically why that should matter so much, because you don't have to always rely on the rov in order to have somebody shecht. You can give them a bechina. You don't have to just rely on that to establish that they know what they're talking about. But in any event, many do assume that this hesitation has to do with hesitation for Nashim has to do with the application of Rov Mitzuyah Neitzel Shechita. So here Rabbi Bleich is suggesting that maybe the Ramah is saying that the minig is not to do it, so that's how we leave it, is that the minig changes the Rov now. That because Nashim have not been involved in Shechita, So now they're not a part of that rov, and they're not going to be able to be reliable for shechita because of the practice.
How does that make it into like a more statistical rov?
Because since they don't tell Rija's words, yeah, let's look at it inside. It's interesting to hear how he phrases it. So it says, "V'nira shababa zelikvoa shazesh she'ein laniach melshem l'shchot." The idea that we don't allow the women to shecht. Right, that's like we said yesterday, that this is not because he's factoring in the Hilchos Eretz Yisrael. He's not saying that because there's some Rishonim who say they shouldn't shecht at all, so that's why the minhag is not to do it. Which theoretically could have made sense, right? That if it was a genuine machlokas Rishonim, should we say, okay, l'chadchila, why should we get involved in a machlokas? And the minhag is to take the non-controversial position. But here we saw the Rishonim didn't accept it as even really a viable position. They said it was just a chumrah that he was innovating. So he says that's presumably not the reason why there's a midig not to do it. But the reason is because they already had the midig not to shecht. Amnam svirulei shechshav sekvar nogu shuv ein zemin haga ba'alma. However, his approach is that since that's been the minig, so now it's no longer just the minig. Now, because of that minig, now we have to worry, meikir hadin, shelo laniach lehem l'shot, not to let them shech. Ubetam hadavar nira, and among the reason it seems, shemeyachar shelo nogu l'shot, since they have not taken on the practice to shech, shuv lo shayach l'gabayu rov mitzuyan etzel shlita mumkanei. Now it's no longer relevant to them, this principle of the Rov Mitzvah Nitzel Shechita. V'lachein, afshem mechaber sham, b'osu asif pasuk adas ha-ga'onim. Right, so according to the Shulchan Aruch, he accepted das of the ga'onim, that yesh lismoch ha-Rov Mitzvah and rak b'di'eved, that we should only rely on it b'di'eved, meaning that you can't be mevar any further. Aval mikol mokom, behetem adas ha-ga'onim pasuk sh'afim ein yodim bo shumumcha. But he also paskin based on that, based on the position of the Gaonim, that if we don't know that there's a person of Mumcha, you're allowed to give it to him to Shechach Achil Lishkol Asmachiv Dechenu Achashchita, based on the assumption that you'll check him afterwards. Because all of this is saying that after the fact, when the guy's not in front of us, Mutter Lechom Shchitaso Asmach Rov Mitzuyin, we're allowed to eat from the Shchita because of this idea of Rov. However, concerning a woman in this case, so the Ramah's assumption is she's not included in the majority. Why? Why is she not included in it? Because our women don't shecht at all. So therefore, those women should not be included in the rov. It doesn't make sense to say that she's part of the rov. That we said that we don't allow the women to shech. The intent is we don't know the mumchen. That's what we're talking about. That's the subject in Sif Aleph that we're talking about. We don't know if the person is a mumcha. Right, the Shulchan Aruch is talking about that we allow a man to shecht on the assumption that we'll check him afterward. Because afterwards we can rely on Rav Mitzuyin. But that klal you can't say by women, like I said before. Right, that theoretically it should be possible if you check her out beforehand that she knows. But the opening statement to the Shulchan Aruch is you can give someone to shecht l'chechila and check them afterwards. So that is not going to apply to Nashim in the circumstances the Ramah describes. That's what the Ramah is talking about. That we shouldn't let them shecht under these conditions that we'll check afterwards. And then he writes that the minhag is they don't shecht. That we shouldn't let them shecht. But Kavanah Sulamar, his reason is, ובסוף דבר רב הוסף וכן המנהג של נשמה שחורת, שכוונה סלום מהשני שחורת את כלל וכלל, והמנהג הזה לא נשאר את הרוב, ולכן אפילו הם בדקו, איזו איש ומסתי שידע, סך השחית, אמה לשחורת, so even if we find that she does know, we shouldn't still show her שחורת, אבל אין זה מצד הדין, that part is not the din, כמו הדנק בתחיל את דבר, שאין להניח לסלם לשחורת, שכוונה היא על סמך לדוק, אחר כך אלו מצד המנהג. So when the part that's מייקר הדין, is commenting on the original statement of the Mechaber that you can give somebody teshecht if they don't necessarily have a clarified status as a mumcha, because we'll check them afterwards. But even when you do know, so that part is subject to a minig. Okay? So, again, there's a lot more to say about this, and future sugyas will have an opportunity to draw upon this, particularly because we will get to Rove, and we will also get to the idea of Chazaka regarding an animal and what its previous status is and how that impacts. So that all lies ahead. A lot of very exciting things for us to deal with after Yontif. So just to recap the general things that we spoke about. So we discussed this principle of Rove Matsui and Eitzel Shechita Momchen Hein, and we wanted to figure out how absolutely does it apply? Because it was Machlokas Rishonim, three views in the Rishonim, two that saw it as not a perfect system, and only meant to be relied on when we can't do better. So how should we do better? So according to some of the Rishonim, and this was the view of the Shulchan Aruch, we have to check afterwards. We're allowed to give it for Shechita beforehand without checking, because the assumption is we'll check afterwards. And then, if we can't check afterwards, it's still kosher because of the Rov. And according to other Rishonim, and this is what the Ramah reflects, it means we shouldn't give L'chachila either, that we should first check to make sure a person knows. But if we find that Shechita has happened without checking, so then we can rely on the Rov, we don't even have to check afterwards. And then there was a third view that you don't have to check afterwards, and we can give l'chachila. So that prompted many to ask, well, why should we be so blasé? If we're able to look into it, we should look into it. And with Rebbe Kabayis asked, why don't we also factor in the miyut here and say, smoke miyut l'chazaka, that should give us pause before relying on this rove really at all. So to address all that, we raise this question of, what exactly do we mean by Rov? And we discussed two existing models of Rov, and maybe there's a third one here, that Rov could be a statistical majority. We just happen to know that most people are one way rather than the other. Rov could be Rubidalesa, come on, could be more of a presumption, a chazaka, that people act a certain way. Both of those are theoretically possible for Rov Mitzvah Neshul Shchuta. Or it could be a third possibility, which Soloveitchik also applied a similar question to the idea of Cheskes Kashrus and Eirecha Nemen Bisurin, that maybe we just start off with a presumption that everyone is kosher until proven otherwise, and therefore that essentially is a Vadai, or that essentially is 100% Rov, because yes, until there is anything disqualifying about this person, they are objectively valid. And if that's the case, so that maybe could explain a couple of things, and why we don't necessarily have to factor in miut, and why we don't have to go further in investigating according to that view in Rishon. And then we discussed Rebbe Bleich's application of this idea to, or another version of this idea really, to the Ramah statement, that when the Ramah says the minig is not teshecht, so he was explaining that since the reality is they don't shecht, so therefore that's going to affect Rov Matsuyin Eitzel Shchuta. So because you can't rely on that anymore, so the Ramah's initial comment was actually responding to the Shulchan Aruch's formulation that you can give a man to shecht without checking him. So the Ramah was saying, but you shouldn't do that with an Isha, because since the minig is for them not to shecht, so therefore we can't rely on Rov Matsuyin Eitzel Shchuta Mumchinei. But Lamaisa, if you do check, so then she should be able to shecht without having to need the rove. But to that he says, so that's where the minig comes in. That part is mitzad minig, that they don't take on this particular task. Okay, so we will stop here. God works that tomorrow should be the normal time, and we will take things from there. All right, I wish everyone a wonderful day. Should be Only good things. Thank you for accommodating the unusual schedule. A mazel tov to our dear chassan here, Avram David Toledano Shlita, Sardi Tar, and we're happy to see him here, and forward to seeing more of you. All right. Yeah.